I like sports. I could do something in sports.
Uh-huh. In what capacity?
Maybe I could be like an announcer, like a color man. You know how I always make those interesting comments during the game?
Yeah, yeah, you make good comments.
So what about that?
Well, you know, they tend to give those jobs to ex-players and people that are, you know, in broadcasting.
Living George Costanza's dream, you're tuned into The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
Well, that's really not fair.
I know.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
So let's talk about it. I know you sometimes hate the way that you feel. Life's a but that's what makes you real. It's what more than a million roses. Oh, these are strange days. In many strange ways. A message to
ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have you with us, everybody, tonight. As you may know, if you listened to last week's show, we're down a Jenna this week, but we brought back somebody else who's got a long history, a successful history in broadcasting. I want to bring in the voice of men's hockey, Jason Pajak. How are you, Jason?
I am good. That was a very flattering introduction, the long broadcasting history.
Well, I mean, hey, you've been doing it for a while. You've helped us out. You've called games at Nationals with us. You've called games at, you know, in other locations with us. You've done women's hockey. You're all over the place. You're one, you know.
I've done football. I've done soccer,
right.
Volleyball.
This is what I'm talking about. Like, the guy's got a heck of a roster, a heck of a laundry list of broadcasting experiences that he's got there. So
got the U Sports punch card. I've just got to do basketball, golf, and I think I'm done.
We'll have to get you on a swimming one as well. We'll see if we can get
that too.
Put a swim. Get you set up at the pool and let you yap away there.
So yeah.
Before we get into everything, let's announce the obvious then. Are you coming back this year? Are we going to have Jason Pajak for another year of Bison Men's Hockey?
I can confirm that I will be back, and unless he's changed his mind in the last few days, Evan will be back as well.
Nice.
So we got the team, we got the band back together for this upcoming season, and we're just really excited. There have been a lot of changes, obviously, because of missing an entire season, but there are a lot of good changes and a lot of interesting changes for this season, so we're excited.
I will say, if you're looking for that information, folks, stay tuned. I believe end of September, we're going to do the men's preview show, so the men's hockey preview show. So we'll get that going along with the women's hockey preview show, which will come up first week of October, I believe. And then we're legitimately a week away from starting the season off for both men's and women's hockey. October 15th, puck drops on Bison women's hockey, Bison men's hockey. Men are on the road in Calgary. Women are here at home. They swap the week after. But get your CanadaWest.tv subscriptions going right now. They're 10% off until September 3rd. So make sure you buy into that. Again, we're trying to figure out what's going on with the radio right now. We have no idea what the final sort of word is going to be. Keep your ears on this station to find out what we're going to be doing as we move forward here. But we're hoping that, knock on wood, we can get back into the studio and get everything going again for that. But we do know that we've been invited back to the rink. That's the good part.
Thankfully, they haven't gotten sick of us yet. They haven't decided that they don't want us around anymore.
I can confirm Kylie will be back for women's hockey as well. So we'll have both play-by-play and color analysts back in their normal spot for this year, which will be fun. You know what? Let's start with women's hockey. There's a big tournament going on right now. Might have heard of it, the Women's World Championship, only because it's been canceled about a dozen times. I want to draw attention to something that has happened on Tuesday. Hillary Knight. As people may know, pretty good hockey player, done some things, won some medals, has, you know, been around the game forever. Hillary Knight became the all-time leading goal scorer in Women's Hockey World Championship history when she scored her 45th goal at the tournament during the United States' 6-0 win over Russia, which is a huge number. 45 goals at an international tournament that happens, you know, every year. I mean, she's been playing in them since she was, like, you know, she was 10. Yeah. But she's legitimately, for longevity, I mean, you have to respect the fact that she's done that. The goal also moved Knight into a tie with Cammy Granato, former U.S. captain, Cammy Granato, to a record 78 points. They're now tied. And Brianna Decker became the leader in U.S. assists. She now tops that leaderboard with 39 as she assisted on Knight's goal. I don't know, and you can hopefully correct me on this, but I don't know, Jason, if there is more history built into one goal than that goal on Tuesday night.
Yeah, I'm just trying to rack my brain for a goal of that magnitude, just like the number of records that were broken and the historical nature of it. Like, there's not one that I can think of in like the NHL or like men's hockey in general. Like, I can't think of one. I've never seen one. And it's, you basically have to read down like a Wikipedia page to get through the whole,
right,
the historic nature of that goal. And I think funny might not be the best word, but Hillary Knight's reaction to finding out, she didn't know until she got into the post-game interview and was congratulated and explained why everyone she had seen was congratulating her.
Right. Which I think is kind of fun that she had no idea it was even happening. Yeah. Like, that's kind of fun for me because I just go, obviously she's there. I mean, again, and you know, I'm not trying to downplay the fact that, you know, this is a special moment. She's there for the team. She wants to win a gold medal, right? Like, I mean, she doesn't care about her personal stats as much as maybe we pretend that she does or think that she does. But I mean, I legitimately sat there today thinking about how, you know, are there any other goals that tie in that much history together? And I can't think of anything, not only in hockey, but internationally on any sporting level. Like, I mean, Christine Sinclair has been doing it forever, and she holds the record for most goals in international competition. There's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. And we're going to probably talk about her forever in terms of the gold standard for Canada. But I don't know if anybody has really had all of that, like, has been there for every single goal like she has, like Brianna Decker has with Knight, or you know, for as long as those two have played together as part of Team USA. They're the pinnacle of U.S. hockey for so long, and they've been at the top of the mountain for so long, obviously, that achieving that kind of record is something that's far more special than I think that we've been giving it credit to, number one. And number two, that the media has really been paying attention to. It takes some serious skill to put up 78 points, you know, and 45 goals over 12 world championships that last for all of, you know, 2 weeks.
Yeah, and I can't even think, like, there are no, I don't think there are any men's players that even get close to being at that many world championships. And then you throw in the number of Olympics that she's played in, the international tournaments, and then her professional career. Like, that longevity is the big thing, because you don't see that with the men's teams. Like, you'll see it sometimes with teams like the Slovaks or the Czechs or the Belarusians or the Latvians, like these, the smaller European teams where they have the same guys going out for every tournament for like 30 years because they just stay there. But you don't, in like the big countries, like the Canadas, the USs, the Swedens, the Finlands, you don't see that very often, if at all. But like, it just shows. And then the dedication that it takes to do that in the women's game. It doesn't matter if, you know, Connor McDavid or Sidney Crosby goes out to as many world championships as they've played in, or the number of Olympics that Sidney Crosby's gone to, because they don't have to worry about the money aspect of it or getting back to work on Monday. Hillary Knight has been very successful in you know, the career that she's had and the work that she's done. But to do that with the lack of resources and support, I think is even more impressive.
I will tell you that the highest score in men's world championship history is from the Soviet Union, which shouldn't surprise anybody because they basically won every gold medal in the 70s. So that's not hard to understand. But there are, of the top 10, there are 7 players from the Soviet Union. There are 2 from Czechoslovakia, and there's 1 from Sweden. There isn't even a North American in there. The top five players, 4 of them are Soviet Union players.
And that those are the Soviet Union players where they were honorable, like they were honorary members of the Soviet military. That's why it was the Red Army team.
Right.
So they could keep their amateur status for the Olympics and things like that. But they were well compensated and they trained day and night and had the full resources of the Soviet Union behind them.
Right.
So that's right. A completely different conversation.
So if you're asking, the top scorer for men is Boris Mikhailov. He has 169 points. He captained the Soviets to 5 gold medals. He coached Russia to another one in 93. He played on the top line throughout the entire 70s. Like he was on the same line as Valery Harlamov and Vladimir Petrov. And mm-hmm. ironically, those are 2 and 4 in the scoring race.
Yeah. So you'll know those names if you saw the Disney Miracle movies as many times as I did as a kid.
Sven Johansson from Sweden. He has 127 points. 14 world championships.
Mm-hmm.
But again, there are no North Americans in that list, but we don't really see guys going year after year after year after year because they have NHL commitments to take care of. The women, though, they have that commitment to make it, like, this is their pinnacle every year, that they want to get mm-hmm. to the world championship and play on that national team because this is basically their Stanley Cup every year. And to see Knight and to see Decker do as much as they're doing, to see them equal one of the all-time greats, a Hall of Famer in Cammy Granato, with some of their scoring exploits, is rather remarkable in my view.
Yeah. Also, fun fact on Sven Johansson, just the career that this guy had also represented Sweden in football and golf.
Wow.
Internationally, was a Swedish champion in water skiing, and was the inventor of the first hockey helmet. So that
no
shows
way.
You how far back we're thinking here.
Inventor of the first hockey helmet. That's huge.
Apparently 1955.
I guess, you know, you got to protect the old noggin when you're playing against the Soviets that much. But.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So 2 Czechs, a Swede, and 7 Soviets is your men's hockey list. But for the women, it's a couple of Americans at the top with Knight and Granato, and then a pile of Canadians after that. Goyette's on there. Wickenheiser's on there. Jana Hefford's on there. Like again, the names are very recognizable, but now that Hillary Knight sort of got the record, like, congratulations to her. Cause again, this is something that I don't think we'll ever see equal just mm-hmm. based upon the fact that for being that good for that long, it doesn't happen very often. We've seen, you know, players that are exceptional get cut a lot sooner than what these players have done. And the fact that, you know, Hillary Knight and Brianna Decker and all those players are kind of still in their prime just tells you how good they are in terms of playing this game.
Yeah, and that they have to go up against the top talent all the time. And I don't think enough noise is made about how good the American women are at hockey. The American women's team is just right up there and constantly either the best team in the world or the second best team in the world.
Well, it's the fact they keep churning out so much good talent as well. Like, don't get me wrong, mm-hmm. the NCAA program has really benefited that USA program because they keep developing these incredible women that are playing the game. My concern, and again, not that I'm concerned about how good the US is, and I'll say this is only because it sort of leads into the next topic. If you heard, Marie-Philippe Poulin, she left the game against Switzerland on Tuesday afternoon after blocking a shot in the chest. Apparently, she's fine. She's going to be back for the next game, a little bruised, but that's about it in terms of everything that's happening. But I mean, you look at the way the pools are set up, you look at the way that everything is sort of going right now. Canada, who's 3-0, they'll conclude the preliminary round against the US, who is also 3-0. That'll happen tonight, on Thursday night. I don't see any of this tournament ending any other way than Canada-US again, which mm-hmm. has me questioning with all of the turnover that we're seeing now. And again, we saw it with the whole Women's World Championship in Finland where a number of those Finns retired after that game, just because it was the last time they got to play sort of in front of their home fans. And they had a great tournament. They won a silver medal after beating Canada in the semifinal. With all of the turnover that we're seeing on some of these teams now, for the teams that aren't USA and Canada, it seems like there's a significant, I don't want to say a drop off, but a significant lowering of the bar a little bit when it comes to the ability to score goals, the ability to control games. Are we bound to see the two superpowers basically control everything? Because Russia has been getting blown out by these. Like, Americans beat Russia 6-0, Canada beat them 5-1, and if it wasn't for a goal with 1 second left, it would have been a 5-0 victory. Like, Russia's not on the same level. Russia's getting better. Don't get me wrong. They're getting better, but they're nowhere near the same level that USA and Canada are. Are mm-hmm. we looking at another problem where we go, this is going to be another, we're back to where we were in the 1990s again?
Unless Russia takes a bigger step forward, I think that's where we're headed. I don't know if the investment is 100% there at the level that, you know, that you're, it's going to take a while to get to the level that Canada and the US are at, but to get to where Finland was, you know, not that long ago, it takes a lot of work and it takes a lot of investment. Like, people don't really, I don't think, fully grasp how much work and how much sacrifice, like, hockey commissions or hockey federations have to make to say, we're going to go and do this. You know, you have to start building very young. I remember a few years ago, there was this kind of this massive uproar and this terror about the quality of young Canadian goaltenders in junior hockey. And it led to Hockey Canada getting the CHL to institute different rules about import goaltenders in junior hockey and pouring tons of money and resources into providing great training and coaching for goaltenders in Canada so we could eventually build back up to be that superpower. And it took a while, and I still think there's still some trouble there, but it's going to take that kind of effort over the course of a few years. Like, that's why you saw Finland being so good but having so many players that retired soon after, because it takes a few years to get them in there and to be playing together and playing at such a high level. Because when the Canadian and American players leave, they go back to their domestic leagues, they go back to college, they go back to, you know, their training camps for Hockey Canada and Hockey USA, and they get to play against top talent the whole time, and they get to play against each other, whereas the European teams don't really have that. I mean, European professional hockey is getting better, and we're seeing a lot more of it, but it's still behind, and it's still going to take that effort and take that time to build it up to that point.
I mean, again, I'm not denying any of that. You're definitely right on with, there's a significant, you know, gap between having, you know, Finland play Russia for two or three games a year versus mm-hmm. Canada against the US two or three games a year. Like, I don't want to say there's a difference in intensity, because that's not true at all. I mean, I think mm-hmm. that Finland and I think that Russia are proud countries, and certainly they're going to put on a show if they can. But when you look at the Czech Republic, when you look at Germany, when you look at Japan, when you look at Hungary, who hasn't had very much success at all in this World Championship, and you go, how are you going to have an Olympics next year when none of these teams seem close to being able to beat Canada and the U.S.? Like, are we talking about, mm-hmm. you know, a 1998 Nagano all over again, where we go, well, you know, there's some other good teams here, but...
I think it might be a little bit worse than that, to be honest, because this Canadian team and this American team compared to Nagano is even better.
And, well, I mean, that's true, yeah.
Like, the gap, I think, has grown significantly, because around Nagano was the starting point, and Canada and the U.S. have just shot forward so far, and the rest of the world is trying to keep up. And, you know, obviously everyone loves watching the hockey at the Olympics, right? But it's going to be, barring a few surprises, I think it's going to be Canada, U.S. in the final, and probably Finland, Russia in the bronze medal game, maybe throw Sweden in there.
Oh, Sweden has no funding, so they're not going to be around.
Well, then
they're not even part of the World Championships. Like, they're in Division One. They have to requalify. They're that bad.
It's maybe the investment that's gone into Chinese hockey is ready to bear some fruit.
It's not there either. No, I mean, we're talking about legitimately now, and I'm not going to say this to be rude to anybody. Mm-hmm. And certainly there are some teams out there that are getting better. I'm not going to deny that. There are teams that are certainly improving. But Japan is 2-1. Germany and the Czech Republic Czech Republic beat Germany on Wednesday. So Czech Republic's 4-0 in the B pool. Germany is 3-1. I look at this and I go, it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter. And I'm not going to say mm-hmm. that to be rude, but when you look at Switzerland, you go, Alina Müller, who led the 2018 Olympic women's hockey tournament in scoring. She had 7 goals and 3 assists in 6 games. She was named the best forward of that tournament. Switzerland scored 1 goal in 3 games so far in this World Championship. Like, yeah. This is not the same Switzerland team that it was 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Like, let's be honest here. Like, something has changed, and whether it's players leaving, players retiring, players moving on to new opportunities, again, players just looking for a livable wage in some cases in terms of being able to, you know, live their life and moving on from that. I mean, we saw three sisters move on from Team Switzerland earlier this year. We talked about it here on the show. You go, what's it going to take to maybe develop a full-time national team like some of these bigger countries, like the USA has, like Canada has, where they're playing hockey all the time and that's their primary job?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I don't know if that's more money to be invested in the women's side of stuff. I don't know if that's more from an Olympic committee side, but it looks like it's going to be a tough, tough sell for trying to, you know, get anybody else to compete at this, not only this tournament, but maybe in the Olympics next year in Beijing as well.
Yeah. And I mean, looking at Group B, I don't know out of that, like how much you can draw from that. Obviously the Czech team is being absolutely dominant, but what's that going to say when you get over to Group A, where you have, you know, those top teams there that are all playing against each other? This, to me, weirdly enough, seems indicative of the whole problem. It's that we've got the two best countries playing each other and playing Finland and Russia, and Switzerland, who up until recently were very competitive and were, you know, able to put up a fight. And then you've got everybody else where it's hard to assess where they're at.
So if, again, depending on who wins between Finland and Switzerland, that team, that fourth place team in that pool, will get bumped down and the Czech Republic will replace them. And you go, how is that going to help anybody? Because the Czech Republic isn't ready for that. Like, they're good. They have good players. They have some players who can put the puck in the back of the net. But are they on the same level as those other three yet? No, not even close.
No. No.
I mean, Switzerland's going to have to pull off the upset of the tournament to knock out Finland at this point. Again, they've scored once in three games.
Looking very unlikely.
Right. And you just go, like, at some point, somebody's got to figure it out and get the ball rolling for some of these teams. But there has been a serious outage of power in terms of the way that Finland... I mean, Finland scored a few goals, don't get me wrong. I mean, they were up 2-0 on Canada in their first game, but Canada roared back and won that game. And then they ran into the U.S., and that was not a happy game, as the U.S. kind of dominated that game a little bit. But now they have a chance to legitimately stay in the top pool and maybe figure some stuff out. But you look at that and you go, they're not really on the... Again, they're not on the same level. They're not on the same level as those two countries. And I'm sorry to say it, but I kind of want them to be. I kind of want three or four teams to be up at that same level. And
I do too.
I feel like we're further away from that than where we were back in 2010 or 2014.
We are. And honestly, it should scare not just the IOC, but I think it should scare hockey fans in general. Like, oh, it's great that, you know, Canada and the U.S. are basically guaranteed a medal at every single Olympics and the World Championships, basically. That's all fine and good, but it's going to be a little bit of an issue when some countries just can't field teams or there's not enough interest to field teams. You know, that's the problem you might run into. And it's the same thing that we see on the men's side with, you know, how strong Germany has become in the last few years. The Swiss being this tenacious team that can really push the top dogs around, even like Great Britain hanging out in the top tier of the World Championship for a couple of years. We're seeing this growth and it's better for the game, and it makes those top teams even better because they have that competition to stack themselves up to. And it grows the game because it gets more people interested in it, it gets more eyes on, and it gets more investment. And it's doing the women's game a disservice to not have that investment there and that effort there, and that, whether it's a federation level or the IOC level, to not be, you know, worried, frankly, about what's happening here.
I'm gonna say, I mean, I don't disagree with you on that.
Yeah.
It definitely hurts to see less teams competitive, but I want to know right now why TSN is doing everybody a disservice by putting Rod Black and Cheryl Pounder together back on these broadcasts. Because honestly, and again, I've watched games that, you know, called by them and by the B team, the quote unquote B team, which is Kenzie Lalonde, who we had on the show, who was a fantastic broadcaster, and Carla McLeod, the brand new head coach of Calgary Dinos women's hockey. Those two together know so much more and are so much more tuned into the game than what Rod Black and Cheryl Pounder are, excuse me. And I know Cheryl has done a lot of work in terms of becoming a broadcaster, but it seems like they don't care about this tournament. Like, they are legitimately talking about things that don't matter. They are making comments that shouldn't be made. They are mispronouncing names. And you wonder what level of professionalism comes with what these two are doing. And again, I'm not here to criticize them as people. I'm sure they're good people. I'm sure they work hard. But when they get on air, I'm mortified by the fact that we have the worst broadcast team calling women's hockey that I've ever heard in my life. And I like both people. I like Rod Black as a CFL guy. I like Cheryl Pounder as when she's doing, you know, analyst work and she's behind the desk. She's got good takes and good ideas. But when they're in the broadcast booth together calling women's hockey, it's like it's a car wreck.
They're out of their depth a little bit. I think on Rod's side, it's a little bit, that's not as much his wheelhouse, which raises the question of why are you putting him there?
Right. And where is the professionalism? If that's not your wheelhouse and you're being assigned that, it's your job to make that your wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. That's what professionalism is.
I know Rod hasn't had a lot to do because the CFL didn't play last year, but
you knew this was coming at some point, though.
Yeah, it feels like TSN, really. They have the rights for this thing, and they know they're going to get in trouble if they don't use it, and they don't do anything about it. So they rushed to get something out there, and that's nothing against Rod or Cheryl. I agree with 100% agree with you. Like, quality people, great at their jobs, but not here. It would be a much better scenario to have Kenzie and Carla as the A team, because you can introduce Carla as the new head coach of the Calgary Dinos, and that's something that gets people thinking and gets people like, oh, what is this? Like, this is not, you know, something that I've heard about before. Like, maybe I'll look in what the Calgary Dinos are about. Maybe there's some young, you know, 8 or 9 year old young woman out there she's watching this tournament and seeing all these great players playing and hears about the Calgary Dinos. And it's the same thing that I come back to. What got me interested in university hockey in the first place was when I was a kid watching the Alberta Golden Bears on TSN. I had no idea about Canadian university hockey until that moment. And it just, like, it's that little spark that you need. And I know the word exposure is not treated very well in certain circles, as a, you know, treating it as a currency. But I think in this scenario, it makes all the difference.
I just wish that they, like I said, I mean, you knew this was coming. You knew it was eventually going to be played. This tournament was eventually going to hit the airwaves. Like, I'm shocked that they just come in and they're not prepared. Like, that's the thing that just kills me about it. And I wish they were, because I know that TSN takes a lot of pride in showing Hockey Canada stuff. I mean, they're always, you know, they pump so much time and effort into the World Juniors and into other stuff. But seeing this, I just go, be better, do better. Like, this should be your gem of August. There's nothing else going on except for some CFL football on the weekends. This should be your gem all week long, where people are tuning in to watch this, because nobody can be at the rink. Why is it that you're putting out such a subpar product?
But exactly.
That's just and me.
To be perfectly honest, I didn't know about the Hillary Knight goal until I saw a random video on Twitter.
Right.
It should have been something that was on the TSN Instagram, should have been on the TSN Twitter, should have been shared super widely by so many people, but it just wasn't.
Well, we're not going to rain on Rod and Cheryl too much, but be better, please. God, that's all we can ask. But next story that we're going to move to after Rod and Cheryl's blunders is perhaps another blunder, because I don't understand this. I don't understand why teams are... I get that there has to be time for a second chance at some point, but if you're not apologetic about the first mistake that you've made, you shouldn't get that second chance. And Mitchell Miller, it was announced today, Mitchell Miller, you might remember him as the Arizona Coyotes draft pick, that the Arizona Coyotes renounced. They gave up their rights to him, and then the University of North Dakota dismissed him after it was found and he was charged that he basically had bullied a kid while going to school. For those that don't know, he had admitted in an Ohio juvenile court that he bullied a black classmate who had developmental disabilities. Basically, the crime was that he tricked this young man into licking a candy push pop that Miller and another boy had wiped in a bathroom urinal. That is disgusting. He was then playing hockey. He started to get noticed, everything was looking good. Arizona Coyotes came calling, said, yeah, we're interested in this kid playing for UND. Sounds like he's really good. Some people did some digging and found out that he had been charged with basically this bullying charge. And yeah, Arizona said, well, we're done with you. We don't want anything to do with you. The University of North Dakota said that he had some learning to do and they would sit down with him and basically help him figure out what he's trying to do or what he's not doing well. And it turned out that, well, they basically didn't have him on the team anymore.
Yep. They quietly got rid of him.
And yeah, now he's looking for a place to play. And the USHL's Tri-City Storm is where you'll see Miller playing next season. Which, again, I don't understand whatsoever.
So the whole Arizona Coyotes situation is made even worse by the fact that not only did every other team take him completely off their draft board, Arizona had lost its first three picks in the draft because they were being penalized by the NHL. So that fourth round draft pick was their first pick of the draft, which was a pretty strong draft. They take Mitchell Miller and then rescind the draft pick. So they lost all four of their first four picks.
Which, that's so Coyotes, right?
So you want to know, you mentioned, you know, how there's time needed for a second chance. Did you read his quote?
He called it an inconvenience earlier this week.
Yes. So the quote is on Miller on the victim of his bullying. I was unable to reach out to them after the incident, but I think eventually I will definitely reach out and obviously say I'm sorry for all the inconvenience I caused when we were 14 with their family and the child. Where in that statement?
Again.
Where it's...
If you're not apologetic, you don't get a second chance.
Just stop talking. Where is his agent at this point?
But his agent's the one... His agent's the one that came up with the apology the first time when he was drafted and then had his draft status renounced. He basically read a statement that said that, you know, he'd try to do better and he's going to, you know, look for opportunities for, you know, to be a better person, blah, 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 blah. Which again, if you're using the term inconvenience, let's just not kid ourselves here that you didn't really come through on that. Mm-hmm. I don't understand how. So Tri-City, I was shocked. So I had to go reading about it and had to figure out what they're going to do. They said that they decided, quote, after careful consideration to add Miller to the roster. The quote that came out from Anthony Noreen, Storm's head coach and president of hockey operations, was, quote, we know Mitchell very well and we are convinced what happened when he was 14 isn't indicative of his character or who he is now as a 19-year-old young man. That Mitchell and the Storm do not minimize what happened 5 years ago. Bullying and racially offensive remarks are wrong under any circumstance. Mitchell is fully aware of that. He regrets what he did and is genuinely sorely. Sorry.
He hasn't shown that. And that, his quote doesn't show that.
What he regrets is not being able to play in the NHL. What he regrets is not being a pro hockey player. Let's be honest with what we're regretting here, because he does not regret what he said, and he does not regret bullying this kid if his term is inconvenience.
I go all the way back to what the judge, looking him in the eye, told him, saying that you're not sorry for what you've done. You're sorry for the inconvenience that it's caused you to be here. Like, saying that he was unable to reach out. We've been in a world that's been on pause for over a year. You've had over a year to do this, and you were unable to reach out?
He's had he had 5 years to make this right. He was not regretful until he got caught. It's the exact same thing as what happened with the Montreal Canadiens pick. He was not regretful until he got caught. And that's the reality that we live in now. If you do wrong and you don't get caught, no harm, no foul. And that's the problem, is that hockey culture, by allowing these kids to come back and allowing these kids to step back into roles where they can become prominent hockey players as opposed to prominent community people, that's the problem, because now you're taking the onus off them to be responsible for their own actions, the consequences for those actions, which should be you lose your job, just like any other human being would. If that was me, if I had done what I did and my employer found out about it, should I be angry that they want to fire me? No. What you did as a 14-year-old, making a kid lick a push pop after it was in a bathroom urinal, that is sick.
He then had to get a tetanus shot, I believe, and an HIV test.
This is ridiculous that and this kid used the word inconvenience.
His apology is what I would tell my parents when I got in trouble for pushing my sister.
Yeah, no, this is...
It's not what you get for when you have racially bullied somebody for years. Like, playing hockey is a privilege, not a right. He is not entitled to the hockey community bringing him back in and giving him this opportunity. He's not entitled to be drafted by the Arizona Coyotes. He's not entitled to playing for the University of North Dakota. He's not even entitled to play in the USHL. He is entitled to absolutely nothing.
Right.
And he has not shown, even in the past 12 months since we all found out about this, that he even deserves a second chance at this point.
And let me be clear. I'm not against second chances, but your actions in terms of your remorsefulness, your actions in terms of your regret, had better be very sincere and very honest with everybody. Like, if you're going to tell me that in the 5 years, you haven't been able to contact this family to offer a true and valid and sincere apology to this kid, and basically telling him, hey man, like I want to make right. I got a lot of growing up to do, but I want to make right. Like I got to repair this sort of chasm that I've caused between us, sort of thing.
Even if it's kind of self-serving to get him to a point where he can try and get his career back on track, it's still better than this.
Right. I don't even care if you want to get a career back. Just apologize to the kid. Like, apologize like you mean it. Like you just crushed the kid's heart.
Yeah.
Because this is ridiculous that a kid who did something like this can be allowed to play hockey again in a league that is legitimately a developmental league for higher levels.
Yep. He has very clearly not accepted the consequences of his actions.
No.
And
no,
reading this statement over and over and over again, it just hits me as a 19-year-old that doesn't get it, that just doesn't care. I can tell I was a 19-year-old at some point. I never did what he did, but I definitely had the attitude that he did about certain things. And right. I know exactly how he sounded when he said these things.
I am shocked that this is something that they were going to allow, but USHL apparently is okay with it. They signed off on the contract. So we'll see how Mitchell Miller does in Tri-City next year. Hopefully he has the worst season of his career and gets cut. But I mean, until he apologizes, I want no success for Mitchell Miller.
So, I mean, if push comes to shove, he'll just get drafted by the Montreal Canadiens.
Well, yeah, they don't care.
They'll hastily put out a press statement.
I'm shocked that they haven't. I mean, they renounced his draft rights. I'm surprised he's not. He hasn't gone and signed with them as a free agent yet. So,
yeah.
Speaking of free agents, sounds like the Arizona Coyotes might be free agents coming up next year.
The Houston Coyotes?
well, let's not get ahead of ourselves here. According to a number of outlets, first reported, I believe, by Katie Strang of The Athletic, the city of Glendale announced last Thursday in a statement that they are ending their operating agreement with the Coyotes. In other words, killing the lease that allows the Coyotes to take the ice at Gila River Arena. The Coyotes have played in that rink, named a number of different things since 2003, have played in that rink since 2003, though, and they are no longer welcome at the rink whatsoever. Not only are they not welcome at the rink, the entire management and front office that occupies office space in Gila River Arena also has to leave upon that termination.
It's amazing to see the difference that 10 years makes. There was a video that I watched today about the Atlanta Thrashers and looking at, you know, what happened for the Thrashers in that whole situation. And basically the NHL came out and they basically had to save one of the two franchises, the Coyotes or the Thrashers. And the city of Glendale put up, I believe, $25 million keep the Coyotes in Arizona, and that led to the Thrashers being let go and sold to True North and relocated here to Winnipeg.
So the reason for that is, and they sort of explained it a little bit. I was reading the one of the Northeast Valley News, I guess it was, one of those articles or whatever. It was written by Jeremy Barron. He said that, quote, in the past 3 years, more than $1 billion has been invested into Glendale Sports and Entertainment District. Mm-hmm. But $25 million is a spit in the ocean when you consider that $1 billion has been poured yep. in and they're seeing nothing back from it.
We're a year later and, or we're 10 years later and now they can't get them out of Glendale fast enough. And this is a Coyotes team that has been very clear that they want out of Glendale. They want to play in downtown Phoenix or close to it.
They've been trying to get an arena in Tempe, I believe.
Yeah, that too. And it's just, it hasn't worked. It hasn't got there. And then there's been a lot, I believe it was the, again, bringing up Katie Strang, her reporting on what happened in the Coyotes front office. The rumor is that it was passed to somebody that had some decision-making power, and they realized how bad things had gotten with the Coyotes. And I'm not saying that it influenced the decision in any way, but I think it might have opened some people's eyes.
Well, she got banned by the Coyotes from being at their games.
And they threatened to sue her and
right, yeah.
a lot of other things.
You mentioned Houston was a possibility. I mean, it's the sixth biggest metropolis in the United States. There's tons of fans there. Obviously, they had the successful Houston Aeros there during the WHL days. They've had, since they've had the Houston Aeros there again in terms of, the AHL. It was a very successful team there as well before they got moved around a little bit. Speculation that the Coyotes could move there is certainly on the rise. But according to President and CEO Xavier Gutierrez, quote, the Coyotes are 100% committed to finding a long-term arena solution here in Arizona, and nothing will shake our determination to do what is right for our organization, residents of the entire valley, and most important, our fans, unquote.
Yep.
Sounds like somebody's willing to lose a lot of money still.
Yeah. I mean, when you're staring down the opportunity to go to Houston, and the success that has in the TV revenue that has, the investment, the advertising, all of that, there has to be something in that that's keeping them there. I know it was on the Steve Dangle podcast. They were talking about because Arizona is pretty big in gambling, and the Coyotes ownership also own casinos, and there might be something going on there, but I feel like it's one more ploy or one more statement to say, we want to make it work here, get us an arena and we'll stay here.
I don't know. Just move them. Like, they legitimately have been on life support now for what, 2 decades? Like, mm-hmm. It's time just to let it go. Like, this has gone on far longer than it should have, but
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe I just don't see it, but
there's a long list of cities and states that would love to have an NHL team. Like Kansas wants another shot. Salt Lake City wants a shot. Houston obviously wants a shot. And those are all that won't cause too much trouble for realignment if those occur.
Well, so Tillman Fertitta, who's the Houston Rockets owner currently, I mean, he's applied to basically own like everything in Houston at some point. Mm. Guy's got tons of money. He's estimated at $4.5 billion. Like, just sell the team to him.
Yeah, he wants it.
Like, just get it over and done with and stop worrying about it. The guy's got, billions. He bought the Houston Rockets for $2.2 billion, which included the arena and a bunch of surrounding property that the arena's on, but dude spent $2.2 billion on a basketball team and now wants to put a hockey team into his ring. Just sell him the damn franchise already.
And I mean, you're not just losing money on putting the bare minimum contracts out on the ice and paying for coaches. And, you think of where, when the whole Thrashers Coyotes thing was going on in the early 2010s, where the Tampa Bay Lightning were financially in an ownership situation, then Jeff Vinnick comes in. He's dedicated to spending money, investing in the team, and he threw tons and tons of money, not just to pay player contracts and, you know, not to, you know, be too open about it, but the Coyotes are the desert of bad contracts now. You know, he invested in paying for players, paying for quality coaching, quality scouting. Just he put his money where his mouth is, and it's helped not only the Tampa Bay Lightning to get to a point where they're winning back-to-back Stanley Cups and could potentially win a third in as many years, but are a financially strong team where people thought that hockey in Florida would never work. We're now three Stanley Cups in on Tampa, and it looks like it's that experiment is going strong. Like, that's the type of investment that needs to be made. And with what has happened in the last couple of years with the Coyotes, with what's happened with their scouting department and their...
I mean, I don't know what Bill Armstrong is doing down there, but he's taken on all sorts of bad contracts, all sorts of crazy contracts that nobody else would even touch. Mm-hmm. And it's like he's... I know he's trying to revamp the team, but to let guys like Connor Garland walk for nothing, like basically he traded him for pennies on the dollar, to let him go, I don't understand. Why are we doing this down it? Are we, is this really just a shell game now that's being performed by Marullo because he's either short on money, doesn't have money, which is one of the reasons reportedly that Glendale wanted out, is that they were basically, the Coyotes were $1.5 million in arrears to the city of Glendale.
It's also the Coyotes that missed payments to their players.
Right. And this is where I go, at some point, the NHL needs to step in here and go, either figure it out or we will.
This is stuff that should not happen in professional sports.
Right.
This is not something that should happen in the top hockey league in the world. You don't hear about this stuff happening in the MLB. You don't hear about stuff like this happening in the NFL. You don't hear about it happening in the NBA. Why does it keep happening in the NHL, and why is it constantly the Coyotes?
Well,
like, again, this is the type of story that you hear the rumors of coming out of the KHL.
Well, yeah, but I mean, this is the thing, though, is that since the Coyotes got there, it's been the KHL down there. I mean, revolving owners and you know, no support, and people don't want to drive out to see the games because it's half an hour outside of Phoenix, and now that we've got an entertainment group there, hopefully we can get that. Oh, the city's got to pour another $1 billion into to make that viable, mm-hmm. because the Coyotes can't or won't. Like, to me, this has just been a place to dump money and watch it burn. And it's time for somebody just to make the smart decision and go, I don't want to watch money burn anymore. We're done. Like, let's get them over to Houston. They're already in the Central Division starting this year. Let's get them to Houston. Let's give Dallas a natural rivalry. Dallas and Houston would be a fantastic rivalry. Mm-hmm. Let's put a natural rivalry in there, and let's forget this idea that Phoenix is anything but an NBA town and maybe an NFL town, but an NBA town for sure with the way that they support the Phoenix Suns.
Exactly. I feel like it's a decision that is out of a few people, the people that matter. I think it's out of their hands right now. I think you need to let the Marullo group figure it out on their own. And I don't know how close they are to doing that.
I don't know if they want to do that. That's the thing, though. I think they're so proud of owning a hockey team that they're letting that cloud their judgment on exactly what needs to be done to correct this problem. Because this problem can't be solved with more money. We've watched this go on now for two decades down in Arizona. Mm-hmm. More money is not the solution here. You need some competent managers running a competent business. And right now, we don't have any of that happening in Arizona.
Yep. At a certain point, the team needs to be good. Nobody likes watching bad hockey.
But even if they are good, they're still 30 minutes outside of Phoenix proper. Mm-hmm. Like, you can get to a game, but if you get off work at 5 p.m. and games start at 7, you have to drive out to the suburbs, which is another 15, 20 minutes away, get the kids fed, get everything ready to go. You're already crunched for time. I'm just going to stay home tonight. This is ridiculous. I'm not going to the Coyotes game.
Yeah. I mean, like, we were seeing that with the Ottawa Senators.
Right.
But the team was good, so people were willing to go out there to see a good hockey team. They were willing to go out there and see, you know, Stone, Hoffman, Carlson. It just started to wear on people, and now they're building a new arena closer to home.
Well, no, that's not happening yet.
Oh, well, you know.
Eugene is not happy with that yet, so.
But yeah, to well, me, he's going to threaten to move the team to Quebec City, and then we'll all just have another row about that. But
yeah, but I mean, at the end of the day, though, I mean, we need somebody competent in there, and if it's not going to be the Murillos, because they look like they're incompetent right now, then move them to Houston. Let's just get this over and done with, and we'll be set for 2022, 2023. Like, let them finish this year's contract out, but starting as soon as they're eliminated from the playoffs, we start packing moving trucks and getting them to Houston.
Like, it just makes sense. Like, you're in this new TV. Like, imagine how much more those US TV deals would have shaken out to be if it was the Houston Coyotes and not the Arizona Coyotes, where you've got that sixth biggest market in there. You've got the top six markets set in stone, and how much more that would have meant for the NHL and the NHL ownership to have that deal in place with Houston there.
Could have happened, but it hasn't happened yet. So let's cross our fingers. Cause if it's another year or another 10 years in Arizona where somebody's just going to keep burning money, just call it, just fold the franchise and start over again.
Yep. It's almost like they're waiting for the Murillos to give up.
Well, I mean, if that's essentially what they did in Atlanta, though, is they waited till those owners all gave up. I mean, again, it was a multi-headed dragon in Atlanta because there were a number of owners in terms of the ownership group there. But basically, the NHL waited till the infighting stopped because none of them wanted to do it anymore. And then they basically said, well, okay, team's moving then. If you guys can't find a buyer, team's moving.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened. So that's how the Jets came back. Yay for the Jets.
Yeah.
Speaking of Jets, as we wrap this up, we're just about out of time here. Jets are one of the teams, one of the NHL teams that have mandated vaccinated people can come back, along with Toronto, along with Calgary, along with Vancouver, who did that on Tuesday. It looks like every single team, except for Ottawa, who apparently is putting it in place, and Montreal have mandated that vaccinated fans can come in. Now, Montreal might carry over from last season where, I mean, it was healthcare workers and they were all vaccinated, so they come in. I'm assuming that's probably going to carry over. But as it stands, two teams of the seven Canadian teams don't. Now, where this gets interesting is that in Canada West, which will affect you and I, Jason, every single team, except for two, have also mandated that vaccinated fans can come to games if they can prove that they've been vaccinated. The only two teams that have not, both are from the city of Calgary.
In the province where they had 1,000 new COVID cases today.
Edmonton can do it, as in Alberta and McEwen have both said that both players have to be vaccinated and fans have to be vaccinated. Mm-hmm. But the Dinos and the Cougars have said that due to health protocols, they cannot mandate, but they can recommend. Which to me is complete BS because
that's not how that works.
Exactly. You're a business. You can do whatever you want.
You're an institution.
Again, province of BC said that they are not going to mandate a vaccine for anybody. Like that's outside their, everybody's got a right to choose, but they said we do recommend it. UBC and Trinity Western have both said that if their athletes want to participate, they have to be vaccinated, and the fans want to come to rinks and to venues, they have to be vaccinated. That's how it works.
Every post-secondary institution in Manitoba, you know, barring a few, have mandated staff and students to get vaccinated.
Right. Westman will do the same. So all the basketball games, all the soccer games will also be affected by that, which is good. I mean, not affected as a negative, but affected as in a positive way. A lot of the OUA has already said that if you don't get vaccinated, don't bother showing up to play sports, let alone watch sports. Mm-hmm. And then a number of the AUS teams have already done that as well. I think UNB actually was selling cardboard cutouts where you could put your face on them if you wanted to be a fan in the stands this year, because it sounds like they're going to try and make sure there's no COVID passed between fans either, which is kind of cool. But like, I look at this and I just go, get your act together, Calgary. You're here on the 15th and the 16th. We're sending our team out to you on the 15th and 16th. Get your act together and just say, do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that's... the excuse that it's because of the health orders is just
that's nonsense.
It's a non-excuse.
Yeah.
It's nonsense. If we can, if in Manitoba with the weirdness we've had over our public health orders can happen where apparently the provincial government is going to pay for people who don't want to get vaccinated to get tested when they're at work, and the U of M and U of W come out and say, nope, staff are going to have to be vaccinated. You can do it.
I know you and I are both vaccinated. We're both excited mm-hmm. to get back to the rink. So if you're going to follow us and they allow that opportunity for fans to come back, don't wait. Get it done now. It's the only way you're going to get into the rink. It's already been confirmed. It's the only way you're getting into the rink this year. So in on that note, get vaccinated because we want to see you back at the rink. If you don't choose and get the, if you don't want to, or you don't have enough time in terms of the shots that you're going to plan out to get here, again, get the package, get the Canada West TV package. You can still follow us and listen to us on the games, which will be good. Jason, got to get out of here. We're quite tight for time here. Anything you want to say before we go?
No, just happy to be back and happy that we'll be back in the rink very, very soon.
Next week, Jason's going to return, it sounds like. Next week, we have a fun new feature for you. So you want to tune in for that. It's going to be fun because I didn't expect this to happen, and it's going to happen, and it wasn't even my idea. So we'll bring all that to you next week. You can talk about all that. We'll talk about all that next week, folks. Stay tuned. Skippy with Free Range Radio coming up next on the station. You've been listening to 101.5 UMFM. It's been the Hockey Show. Glad to have you back, Jason. Glad to have you on the show once more.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week, everybody. Have a good one.
All these are strange days in many strange ways. Science fiction, I believe, has become reality. All these are strange times lost in our minds. We don't know, it's unclear, where we'll be this time next year. Oh, strange days. Hey! Strange days. Strange
days. In the time I've worked here, I've taken great pains to see as little of this building as possible. Turns out the third floor is silent, empty, and completely free of work.
Broadcasting live from the third floor of University Center at the University of Manitoba, this is 101.5 CJUM FM in Winnipeg.